This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is a special edition iFanboy podcast on Captain America Civil War. Special Sky Fanboy podcast on Captain America Civil War. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Ron Richards.
Hello.
And Josh Flanagan.
It feeds the rich while it buries the poor. Ain't that rich?
As we promised, all three of us are here. See, I knew we'd do it.
You jerk. So we're iFanboy. Normally we talk about the week's comics, but sometimes we get together to talk about the week's movies, which it feels like. In the summertime, the comic book films, and this kicking off the summer season is Captain America: Civil War, the first weekend of May, as that is now Marvel's weekend. Usually their first movie comes out the first weekend of May, and there'll be some spoilers. So if you haven't watched the movie yet, pause the show and come back as we discuss what happened in Captain America: Civil War. This is the third Captain America film. It is basically the third Avengers film, and it is the latest in the Marvel Cinematic Universe story, which has been unfolding since Iron Man back in 2005?
And it's interesting because not only does it pick up the thread from the previous Captain America movies, but it also kind of picks up the thread from the Iron Man movies.
And Avengers,
yeah.
Yeah,
it's shared universe thing is working out.
I think they're onto something.
So as the last Captain America film ended, Bucky was a fugitive, a Winter Soldier. He was the big bad in that film, and he was sort of had his memory restored but went on the run, and Captain America and Falcon were going off to find him. But then they apparently got waylaid by the events of Avengers Age of Ultron, and so as this film opens up, Cap is leading the new team of Avengers that we met at the end of Age of Ultron on a mission in Africa to take down Crossbones, the villain of the Captain America Civil War story in the comic books that Ed Brubaker wrote. And
yes.
So that's where we kick off. This film was directed by the Russo brothers, who directed The Winter Soldier, and were previously veterans of television, like Community.
And many episodes of Arrested Development.
Arrested Development, yeah.
Oh.
Written by Christopher Markus and Stephen McFeely, who also wrote the second Thor film, the writing of the two Avengers Infinity War films.
Right.
They also wrote the two Captain America films previous to this.
It seems as if Kevin Feige has his guys now.
Yeah.
Right? Like, because we went through all the first movies, a bunch of different directors, a bunch of different writers and stuff like that, but it seems to settle on this group.
Well, so if you can work in the system, which is a very producer-driven system here.
Yeah.
Keeping the train rolling.
And they're TV guys, so they're kind of used to that system a little more, working right in collaboration, you know, in an organization. It's not like they thought Kenneth Branagh was going to stick around.
Right. And Kenneth Branagh and his canted angles.
He really liked the angles.
So I want to start the discussion of this film in an unusual place. Let's talk about fonts.
Oh my God! Yes. Well, should we do the spoiler warning, Connor?
We did the spoiler warning already.
The fonts are awful. Spoiler.
Right, Fred. I was so delighted by the use of typography in this movie.
I loved it.
Well, I loved it too. It was great.
I loved it, but although it was weird considering this is a film of a piece, and no other film uses this method of denoting where they are, and it's the same filmmakers. It wasn't like a new filmmaker came on and said, "I'm going to do this." However, on its own, I loved the use of the giant typeface setting to show where they were. It was very 70s.
Nope. So every time they changed scenes or even did a flashback, anytime you had to set a establishing thing, they used this very large sans serif font.
Like Mr. Robot.
Yeah. Like Mr. Robot. And I'm looking online, and it believes the font is called Atom.cg. If you're looking for the font online, it is a nice kind of. It's got the A. The A's got a very point, like A's. There are no serifs, but it's more of a pointed font. And I loved it. I absolutely loved it. Josh did not.
No,
why?
It was jarring. It just was like I noticed it. It's like that's actually the number one rule of comic book lettering is you don't really want to notice it. Like you don't want it to stand out. So I was like, what is this thing? It doesn't.
But this isn't a comic book though. It's a film.
Well, there's okay, fine.
I mean, it was supposed to be. They obviously want you to notice it. It was a giant.
I know, and I guess I did. It just stylistically, it was like, it'd be like if you were listening to like an album, and then like three songs in, all of a sudden, like it was mostly about cello, and it had previously not been that. Like it just seemed like it didn't ruin it for me, but I didn't like it as a stylistic choice because it seemed it was too big. And I'll be honest, like I thought, you know, it feels like. It would make so much sense to do that more like you would in a comic book. If there was anywhere you were going to do that. And it's not like that's something that's overused or that's something that would be hacky.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it was very reminiscent of and now I'm blanking on what it was reminiscent of. Comics have used those big, you know, kind of a big establishing font type thing. Yeah. I liked it a lot. I don't know. I just liked it because it was different. I liked it because it was aggressive. I liked it because it was unexpected. And when they change location and when, you know, when Tony Stark goes to Queens and there's the shot of I know exactly where that was in Queens and it says Queens. I liked it. I giggled.
Let's hold on though. Okay. You know what? That's a different thing. I'm going to table that. Stick a pin in that, as they say. In the business rooms.
All right.
What are we sticking a pin in? So we know it'll come back to it.
About when they cut to Queens.
Okay.
Peter lives.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. So we're split on this font. Great. So now let's talk about.
Well, no, we're not split. We've got a plurality here, Connor. Two of us like it. One of us don't. The font stays.
All right. I'm not taking you to the mat on this.
My overall thought of the film is that. I was worried in the first act because I thought the first act teetered on the edge of being overstuffed like Age of Ultron. However, I thought that never really fell over the edge. I thought they rode the line pretty well of making sure everyone had something to do and did not feeling overwhelming. But in the beginning, I was a little disappointed only because Winter Soldier was so focused and such a different vibe, whereas this one felt like an Avengers movie, and it was a little worrisome. But I thought by the second act, where you fully embrace it, and they have a great handle on what's happening with these characters, and then the third act is really felt very Winter Soldier-y. So I thought, in the end of it, I thought it was a really strong film. I don't think it's Marvel's best film. That's still Winter Soldier, but I thought it was up there, and a more successful Avengers film than at least Age of Ultron.
Yeah, well, let's go around the table. So let's just say whether or not we liked it and then go from there. Josh, do you agree or disagree, or how do you feel?
I liked it a great deal.
Okay. I liked it a great deal as well. And Connor, I echo your sentiments is that I think that there were some slight flaws and a little cracks here and there, but I think it was definitely stronger than Avengers 2. And all in all, left with a huge smile on my face, and I was actually laughing as I was I wasn't maniacally laughing. I was giggling to myself because you know, for the past couple of days, I've seen a lot of people on Twitter tweeting at us and talking, you know, just talking, saying I can't wait to hear what iFanboy thinks of the movie. And it's like I'd be very surprised if we did not like this movie. You know what I mean? I would be very surprised if one of us was railing against it about how bad it was or anything like that. This was like this had enough notes and got enough stuff right to give an overall I liked it for everybody, I think.
Well, I mean, you got me here, so it could go either way.
Yeah, true.
No, I mean, it's one of those things, but I guarantee you that there are people out there
they're not astute or wise people, but they like they went and they watched Batman and Superman, like, that was great, I can't wait to see what iFanboy says, and then we're surprised. I guarantee you there were hundreds of people like that. So you never know. And this stuff, the kind of reaction to this stuff is so subjective. You know, like I could, maybe I read a Captain America comic when I was 12 and I was like, you know, it just wasn't what I wanted. Yeah. I didn't feel that way at all. And I thought the same thing. I'm like I am. So I kind of always gird myself like, oh, I probably won't like it as much as everybody else did. And at the end, I was like, that was really fun. That was great. Yeah. I was really happy about that, which was not how I walked out of Age of Ultron.
One of the things that this movie has going for it, that all these movies have going for it, is that they need to really pat themselves on the back for casting Chris Evans, because he pulls off the thing that no one else really pulls off, which is a completely unironic, I read this in a review earlier, unembarrassed superhero.
Idealistic.
Yep. He is not embarrassed to be wearing the goofy outfit with the giant shield. He pulls it off and makes it work. And if you have a guy in that suit who doesn't do that, then the whole thing falls apart.
And why he's able to play against Robert Downey Jr. so effectively.
Right. And that and their dichotomy, which is not new. They've been at ideological blows since the first Avengers film.
Well, I mean, I don't want to keep doing this and bringing it over and over again, but I did think, you know, at the point in this conflict, which I did not like to watch, like, I was like, oh, that's it's, and you shouldn't, I don't think. Like, you don't want to see them fight with each other. Right. But I did think, well, boy, they really built this up and earned it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Unlike that other movie. And I think that's all that.
Let's not mention that again.
I'm not going to, but really, that is a big difference in sort of something being earned or unearned. And also, there was, you know, there was in the middle of it there was pathos. It was like they didn't want to be doing it either.
Right.
Like they were upset. You could read that in it, and they still managed to do that in the midst of making it fun and having, you know, moments of levity and you know, it was very successful. And I mean, Connor, and you were right. Although I didn't see it in the first act. I wasn't thinking this is way overloaded. But somewhere, you know, in the middle of the second act, I thought, wow, look what they're doing here.
Yeah.
Because this is a lot of things, and I don't feel like Spider-Man 3. And so let's not keep bagging on Batman Superman. Spider-Man 3 is another movie that did that. Or Age of Ultron. Yeah, Age of Ultron was another one. Yeah. There was way too much going on, and there wasn't a payoff in that sense, whereas this was.
I think my concern was that I didn't expect it to be an Avengers film from the first frame.
Right.
I thought we'd lead into it where, you know, this is just my own expectation going into it, was the way Winter Soldier was done was such a streamlined Cap film. I really thought we were going to start that way and then build into it, whereas, you know, right off the bat, we're in the middle of an Avengers mission with all of the heroes, and so... It really was, more than anything, an Avengers film until the last.
How come these movies can't seem to hang on to their slightly older white male actor person? You know, they got Robert Redford for the other one. They got who was it in this one?
It was William Hurt.
William Hurt reprising his role as General Thunderbolt Ross.
Yeah, from Hulk.
Who's now the Secretary of State. Yeah, that was because they said Ross. Like they call it. I mean,
it took me a while to put that together. And then at one point, I was like, maybe that is him. Because I was thinking, I'm now easily getting to the point where there's been enough of these movies that I don't keep them all completely straight.
Yeah, he was reprising his role as Ross from Hulk.
Yeah, but I saw the mustache and I was like, oh, okay. Yeah,
he had the mustache in Hulk.
I think I only saw that movie once, you know.
I like that movie. I like that movie
a lot.
Yeah,
I did too. Yeah.
Ed Norton Hulk.
Yeah, yeah.
They should remake that movie, but with Ruffalo. No, they shouldn't. Stop myself.
So the story is that after another disastrous mission in which there's a lot of collateral damage, the
civilian life.
The UN says we're going to have to regulate the superheroes and keep them under our thumb because they can't have this. And
it's the same plot, by the way. I know I don't want to keep doing. I was like, wait a minute. I just saw a movie about this.
So Cap says, "No, I'm not going to go. I'm not going to do that." And then the sides split as Iron Man leads the other contingent of heroes.
Now that said, what I thought was interesting is that while the flashpoint and the actual incident was completely different, this probably there's a lot of Age of Ultron borrowed nothing from the comics other than the title.
Right.
Right, just the idea of the words Age of Ultron, right? Thank God, I know, yeah. Whew. You know, Winter Soldier as a movie borrowed a lot from Ed Brubaker's comics. Actually, ironically, this movie has more of Ed Brubaker's Winter Soldier stuff than the Winter Soldier movie did.
I was really hoping in the flashback we'd see a young Ed Brubaker in the lab activating Winter Soldier, but we didn't see that.
But I thought it was, you know, while the flashpoint was different, the actual motivation and events that come out of it was really similar to the comic Civil War. Yeah. You know, like basically like a horrible thing happens and the you know, it's not the UN, it was the government, but it was like, wow, like I actually see the kind of conceptual dotted lines to the original Civil War comic, which I think is good. Like they didn't just take the idea of putting the heroes against each other and call it Civil War. Like there was actually a couple of dotted lines, not 100%, but enough to, you know, scratch the comic fan itch in me.
But it also takes all those scenes that people complain about, the wanton destruction on a mass scale, and uses it for a story point and says, okay, in the same way that other film did, that, okay, this is actually bad, people wouldn't stand for this, so this is what happens from it. And it was good. And in that sense, we got the birth of the Black Panther, because at the UN meeting for it, there's a bomb goes off killing T'Chaka, the president of Wakanda, and so his son T'Challa, who we meet earlier, is has to take the new role as king.
Unfortunately, I will always look at and see as Jackie Robinson and then hear as James Brown forever.
I'm not going to be the one that came to Montana. Well, but despite that, I was going to say he was fantastic.
Yes.
I mean, like, I don't know why you got to shoot him down like that, Josh, but he was great, I thought.
Probably no, he's a great actor. It's just that he solidified himself in those two movies as actual people and characters, and I don't know him at all from anything, so he's Jackie Robinson and then James Brown. So it's good that he did this, because now he can be a different character.
Well, Chadwick Boseman. Great as T'Challa. I mean, he first of all, in a much meatier role than I had anticipated for this film.
Yeah.
He's in it all the way through and very important in it. And
did you know it was gonna be him?
What do you mean?
I don't read anything about these. So when I go in, I'm like as fresh as, you know, other
like
than
a freshly born baby.
Yeah, so I like when he takes his helmet off and you see him, I was like, oh, it's him. Like I knew who he was, so I was like, I was happy about that, because I figured if with that guy in it, who's a rising career basically. I thought, oh, if he did it, that's good.
I thought Black Panther was easily in my top five. There are five things that were great about this movie, and Black Panther is one of them for me.
He's the emotional spine. You know, he's the one who at the end says, "I'm not going to go down the dark path for revenge. I'm going to do this the right way." He's sort of, you know, almost more than Cap. He's the one who decides how this movie is going to end.
Yeah.
But let's skip ahead to that. Let's talk about, in my screening, there were only two moments where the audience broke out into applause. One was the first appearance of Peter Parker, which we'll get to in a second. We'll pull that pin in a minute. But the other was Ant-Man. I was really surprised. Yep. When they reveal Paul Rudd laying there in the van passed out, the whole audience blew up into applause. I was not expecting that.
The audience that I saw it twice with two audiences, and once Josh and I saw it together, and I honestly don't remember because that was a crazy night. But it was funny because I was at the premiere with a lot of the cast and everything like that, and I was monitoring who was getting the most applause, and actually Paul Rudd got the most applause during the movie than anybody else's kind of reveal. And it wasn't necessarily when he woke up from the van, but it was the big moment in the fight.
Well, yeah, we'll get that too. But it was just his first appearance that the audience broke onto applause. Yeah. I was shocked, not because he's not great, but, you know, Ant-Man was a good film, but it was nowhere near as popular as the other ones. So I was pretty surprised by that.
Paul Rudd as Ant-Man was also in my top five of the best things in this movie. In fact, very close to the top. I think that he stole the scenes he was in.
He did, but he also wrote that line of, any more of that and this would get irritating.
Yeah.
In the same way that, in an Iron Man 2 sort of way, let's put it that way. But it was, like, because he's Paul Rudd and because we're so, like, it totally fit. It's almost like the actor was like, what the hell am I doing here? Look at this.
Which works perfectly because...
It does, because it's like, well, look at how that guy's built. Look at that. I'm not that. I mean,
I was reading an interview with the writers, and they said the line where he hands Cap back his shield and says, here you go, Captain America, was all improv'd.
Sure.
And it was just having this bewildered guy in the midst of this crazy superhero chaos worked.
It was that, and it was when they met everybody in the parking garage, and he's like, "You're Captain America. I'm shaking your hand way too long." Like that was like the idea, like saying his inner monologue was just perfect.
Yeah, nothing like the Scott Lang in the comics. Well, actually, it is now. It's been adapted. There was one other moment that I noticed, and this isn't like it wasn't like a big deal for everybody, but there was like a young black girl in an Avengers shirt in front of us, and I remember when Black Panther sort of shows up and starts kicking butt, like I heard her cheer.
Yeah,
and I thought that's really nice.
Yes.
Because in the same way that when we were watching the Force Awakens,
yeah,
and sort of Rey and Finn sort of have their moment again, and I was just like, this is so good for other people.
Yes.
And I had the same thought. I was like, this is, and like, you know, not in any sort of like tokenism way. It was just like, oh man, that's great. Everybody's going to start to be able to get something out of these.
Well, there's three super strong black male heroes in this film.
Sure.
And they're not made a big deal of. They just are there with every, you know, with everybody else. And
Black Panther's such a rad character. Oh, like I love.
Well, Black Panther's a great character.
And they nailed it with the costume, with everything. Like they, like, because that's something that could be done really goofily and really, like, you know, really not. Yeah, it's a goofy name. The whole kind of approach and everything like that could be really, you know, but like, and they played with it, you know, like by having when Falcon and Cap and Black Panther are being transported in Berlin and they're in the van, it's silent, and then Falcon goes, "So you like cats, huh?" Like, it was able to address that. Like, that's the thing about the Marvel Universe or the Marvel Cinematic Universe, is that they can make those jokes that sometimes we're all thinking as well, but streamline it into the dialogue and into the character interactions in a way that makes it appear natural and not, you know, not as fan servicey as it could be, or, you know, because I will admit there is some fan service line.
It's up definitely just like Paul Rudd in the right way, because I mean, I am the first one to get annoyed by stuff like that where I think that they're taking a cheap joke out. But you know what, actually Falcon's another one that, like, I liked him. Another one.
I really like Anthony Mackie. I really
What I was going to say is that I didn't really feel strongly about him one way or another, but he'd really won me over, I guess, by the end of this movie.
It was the interaction with him and Bucky.
Well, that was one of my top five things would have been the Bucky Falcon roadshow. Like, you know, those two guys could have been a movie.
Yeah,
they were really funny together. As our friend Ben tweeted, it was like your high school best friend meeting your college best friend. It was kind of like that rivalry of who's Cap's better friend.
If we're doing a little bit of a top five, and it sounds like we're in this area, I don't mean to spend a lot of time on it, but for me, as you guys know, I've had some issues with the Clint Barton in this.
Yeah.
I was kind of won over by at this point.
He was looser in this.
He did got that. That surprised me. In the screening Josh and I went to, when he came back, when what's the actor's name?
Jeremy Renner.
When Jeremy Renner was on screen for the first time, the audience broke into applause. And I remember looking at Josh. I'm like, whoa, I didn't expect that.
He was more Hawkeye.
Yeah.
He was like Thunderbolts era Hawkeye almost. Yeah. And then so, I know that whatever the first time you saw a fastball special is, you know, like, and I was like, oh, look at that's happening. When Ant-Man was on that arrow, I was like, fuck yes.
That was awesome.
I'm pretty sure I threw up the horns.
Well, so continuing with the top five things, you know, I thought Falcon and Bucky were good, but they weren't on my top five. The big one, which we're going to get to, which I want to lead up to, but the other two, to round out the remaining two before the last one, Jim Rash as the MIT professor in the beginning. Delightful.
I'm going to have to disagree with your police work there, Lou.
absolutely delightful.
Totally pointless. Didn't belong there. Should have cut it.
Yeah. And then the Visions casual. Visions casual wear.
I forgot about that. Was going to be the entire thesis I had for this movie. Like, when he showed up in the sweater, I looked at Ron and I was like, I can go. And I was completely serious. I was like, that's all. Him sitting there cross-legged in his Land's End pants. Jesus.
He looked more natural in that outfit than he does in his costume.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah. Oh, it was great.
Awkwardly cooking for Scarlet Witch, like, not sure about paprika. Like, that was
trying to understand what a pinch is, like what a pinch of paprika is. I mean, like, that honestly delivered way more than I thought it was going to. Every time it was on, it was electric.
He should consider just fighting in that outfit.
Yeah, exactly. I just want a solo Vision special of him at home doing, like, cleaning.
Yeah.
You know, just
there's literally a miniseries going on right now.
True. Yeah, exactly.
Fucked up though.
That was great.
So yes, yeah, so that's my top four items that leads up to the big one. Are we ready to tackle that, or
can we pull your pin?
You know, Josh? What's interesting is that when they showed Spider-Man in that teaser trailer, I thought, oh, why did you blow that?
Right.
They ruined the moment. Yeah,
but it turns out that I don't think they did.
Yeah.
And B, they actually had enough other things that I did not expect that I was able to forgive it.
This is interesting because we had heard, rumors and things like that, and we were told to expect very little from his performance in the movie, that he's barely – in fact, I believe the words are he's barely in it.
Right.
Now, Connor, do you agree with that? I mean, like, I felt as if it was – I went – no, we got more – more than I was expecting.
We were told that early on, and then after the trailer came out, we were told actually he's in, that was only 5% of his screen time, that he was in it a lot more.
Okay, I missed that memo.
So Tom Holland as Peter Parker Spider-Man, who we first meet in Queens.
Oh, God.
At his home with hot Aunt May.
So hot. Not even fair.
Now, I really thought it was going to be Miles Morales for some reason. Did we not know that? Did we know that? I guess we did because you knew the.
We did.
Again, I wasn't paying attention.
You thought that because you spent a lot of time on social media.
Right, yeah.
And that was the social media game of telephone.
Well, no, also because I didn't look up any actual information about the film.
That was the social media game of telephone, which someone said it should be Miles Morales, and then it slowly became it's going to be Miles Morales.
And then they got mad when it wasn't Miles Morales.
And it was never going to be Miles Morales.
If you had asked me if that should be Miles Morales, I probably would have said yes because I've liked that character. And he really is now, in my head, the young version of that character. However, if they had done this character any differently, I would have stuck with that. But I was like, that was pretty good. Yeah. Pretty good.
This is easily the best Peter Parker Spider-Man movie we've ever seen on film.
Hands down. They nailed it more. Like, they nailed it better than you could nail anything, if you ask me.
And we didn't have to watch the origin again. So that was
great. Yeah, no, they just glossed over it. Like, what happened? He's like, that thing happened. Don't worry. You know, like,
He's and in the I mafia. Thought the,
yeah, right. It doesn't exist. The mafia doesn't exist. Nothing happened. But the way they handled it with Tony Stark recruiting him and kind of calling him out and figuring everything out and snapping and building that relationship, and then up until the big battle when he appears and it's so much more than him just grabbing the shield, seeing him crawl along the roof,
and
like just little things like that, and of course the banter and all stuff like that. But I'll be honest with you, I teared up at the exchange between him and Cap. So there's a part of the fight where a lot of the big fight in the beginning where the two teams are fighting, there's a lot of one-on-one, there's a lot of pairings that are also telling story, which was good. But then also, if one criticism got a little, I'm like, all right, a little long in the tooth. But when Cap and Spider-Man are fighting and Cap says, hey kid, you got some spirit, where are you from? And he says Queens, and Steve says Brooklyn. I teared up a little.
Yeah, because there's a little moment of, Brooklyn.
Yeah. Exactly. It was a little New York pride. It was a little hometown heroes. It was a little it was everything. Yeah.
They showed a shot of Queens and some public housing, and I was like, he doesn't live there.
But he does in this. Clearly, he lives in that building.
I guess. But
they had a very nice apartment in that building.
Yeah, I was like, that's not that. Well,
the living room was decorated very nicely. Admittedly, he's taking computers out of the garbage, which I know he says, but like that living room looked nice.
Well, you can still decorate an apartment nicely if it's in public housing. Sure, but they were living in public housing in that scene. But he was really great. We talked about this way back when he was cast, that the real interesting benefit to him in this situation is that he is so unlike all of the other characters. So what happens when you basically drop a kid into the midst of all these 40-year-old superheroes? And what happened was it was a very interesting parent. They're all exasperated by this kid who won't shut up and don't stop moving and is freaking out that he's even there in the first place. And I thought that was
except really Don nice. Cheadle, who's suddenly 60 now.
Yeah.
What happened there?
They played Miles Davis. And rubbed
like,
off.
Yeah, nice. What I liked about Spider-Man's participation as well as Ant-Man's participation in the fight was that unlike any of the fight scenes that we've had in the previous seven Marvel movies, this was full of surprise, like natural and honest to God surprises.
Right.
We're like, no one expected Spider-Man to be there and no one knew what he could do. And then no one expected Ant-Man to do what he was going to do. Like, and there's a point where Tony says, like, anyone else have any surprise powers I don't know about? Like it was like, and it added back to the, because after all of these movies, like the first round of movies were spectacular and they're opening our eyes to this universe and all stuff like that. And then we had a whole bunch of movies where they're just kind of playing with themselves.
Right.
And then now it's back to this idea of where anything can happen, surprises around every corner, like a true Marvel comic in the movies.
Group of characters, right? So we'll have Doctor Strange coming, and that's going to be now we got magic introduced into all this, and that's a whole new element to all this. So I think that's what's really strong about adding all these new people. But he was, I have nothing bad to say about him. He was wonderful. The only thing that didn't hit exactly right for me was the admittedly funny Star Wars joke.
Yeah.
Because I thought, well, even though he's young, he's still a nerd, and he wouldn't be like, hey, anybody know this movie named Empire Strikes Back? Like it was
this old movie, like they tried to play it up like, hey, I saw this really old movie, Empire Strikes Back. But now here's the thing, two things on that. One is the first time I saw the movie – applause and laughter covered up those lines.
Right.
So I had to piece together what that was. So the second time I got to hear it, and he goes, "Hey guys, did you ever hear that old movie Empire Strikes Back?" And then War Machine says, how young is this kid? You know, like right. in a reaction to that. Now that said, you know, like he's, how old is he in this? He's 15, 16. Is he supposed to be like around there?
Yeah.
You know, my 10-year-old niece refers to A New Hope as oldie time. So,
I'm gonna say the idea that no one's ever heard of it, you know.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing would be that he's 15; he has no idea what these people, who they are, what they think, or whatever. So he's hedging his bets about it.
It didn't ruin the experience. I just thought, well, that's a strange thing for a nerd to say.
But if he's a nerd, then he's like, maybe he's embarrassed about it. Maybe he thinks it isn't.
Okay.
None of the 40-year-olds
you've convinced me. I mean, it was a funny joke, and I thought, in the context of because we haven't talked about it yet, but because they're fighting Giant Man. It was a great line. So let's talk about Giant Man, who was awesome.
It was great. Again, Paul Rudd as Ant-Man, and it brought a surprise, and it's something that makes perfect sense because we all know that Ant-Man then became Giant Man, but I didn't expect that to happen in this movie.
No. It was also one of those things where I was watching it, and I was like, how come I've never seen this before?
Right.
Really, I mean, like, I've seen it in comics a billion times, but... You know,
It happened in a movie, and they handled it much the same way with surprise. And also, you know how it kind of got like moved in slow motion or whatever? It was in the Muppet movie when Animal took all those growth pills. I was dead serious. Remember? No, do you remember? And it went all slow motiony, and then he said, and it echoed, and then he went running, and then
It was up there sort of with when they did the Quicksilver in the X-Men one.
Right. Yes.
You're just like, oh. Again, we've seen this a million times. Here's a cinematic take on it that's really interesting, you know. And we've seen, you know, Pacific Rim or whatever, where you're, you know, seeing these giant things move around from that perspective. But you know, it was good. That whole scene, I was like, this is like the best. I mean, the whole thing was a complete and utter comic book cliche.
Yeah. Yes.
But it's sort of the one thing that they haven't done in a movie.
The thing was the animal thing. Seeing him rip off the wing of a plane and use it to swat at War Machine and Iron Man, like, was awesome and was so, yeah, was great. But I actually want to divert.
Not a high tensile strength. Those bad call.
But I want to divert away from the specific of Giant Man and more about the fight at the airport. That, you know, number one, I mean, like, and I get it, you know, like, it was the cliche kind of comic book heroes fight kind of thing, and they did their best to echo the two lines of heroes facing off image from the original Civil War comics, which is a nice little nod. But and Josh, you and I were giggling over this in the movie, the number of times where just as a group they all started running
slow start, and then like they pick up speed.
Yep. Like the walk and the jog now,
right?
Yeah. Walk into a jog and then they'll run. Yeah, it's just.
I'm gonna go ahead and say that was self-aware.
Yeah, I think so.
This is silly. I mean, let's remember that like these guys. I'm gonna keep coming back to this, and maybe it helps me. Like, they come from Arrested Development, which to me is the smartest comedy maybe I've ever seen. So any of those things, they're gonna be aware of them.
Yeah.
There's no way they're not.
Yeah. Yeah, and the thing was, I mean, the whole movie was built around that middle fight. And, you know, and on one level, it's stupid because whenever the heroes fight, we know that they've just got to get over fighting and then realize they should be teaming up to fight the actual villain. And actually, there's at one point towards the end of that fight when Cap is trying to fit, you know, they're trying to make the decision as to whether they're all going to get out or some are going to sacrifice themselves so Cap and Bucky can go. And Falcon says, "Cap, this isn't the real fight." Like, literally the line is in the movie.
Talking to us.
Yeah, exactly.
Just so you guys all know.
This isn't the real fight. And I thought that was kind of, again, self-aware. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, the thing that I would say about that fight that was different in this than in the comic books is that pretty much every comic book I've ever seen where they did this kind of thing, which is anytime heroes have ever met, in the comic it really seems like they're going at each other, you know, the gritted teeth and everything. Whereas in this... There was definitely that sense of hesitation. You were like, "Well, they're not gonna." Because in the comics,
they were reluctant.
Well, they called, and that happened when Scarlet Witch intervened with
Scarlet Witch and Hawkeye were fighting.
Black Widow. Yeah, and she knocks Black Widow down, and she looks at Hawkeye, and goes, "You're pulling your punches."
Well, yeah. that's the thing is that, and at that moment when she went after him, I just went, based on everything we've seen before, they don't fight.
Yeah,
and then they validated me right then, which I really liked. Because I thought no, that their relationship was such that they don't fight.
They were play fighting.
And then they were like
sparring.
But none of them wanted to be fighting each other, so there was no...
Except for Tony and Steve, really.
Yeah, there were no stakes, I guess, and usually that's a bad thing. But in this case, it wasn't.
Speaking of Tony and Steve, and moving away from the middle fight, but the end, the third act fight between Cap and Bucky and Iron Man, I know we saw some of it in the trailer, but like... My God, the dancing of a fight and the synchronicity that Cap and Bucky had in fighting together was like I don't normally like these fighting scenes because I hate how they change the frame rate. Do you notice that? Like where it becomes slightly flickery, like and I don't know if that's
they
to cover
that,
up the
they had that problem in the opening. It was I thought the opening was actually shot poorly.
Because it has that weird frame rate thing where it's like flickering and I don't know, it bothers me. But in that scene, in that whole, every time Cap and Bucky and Iron Man fought and it was just like pop, 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 you know, like throw the shield, hit with the shield, toss the shield, you know, like it was just like, those were moments where I was like, wow, that's really good for fight choreography.
You know, that was one bit that I knew, like he shows up in Siberia or wherever and I thought, they still haven't had that fight.
Yeah.
And I was like, I wish I didn't know that.
Yep. To pull back even farther back, did any of you spend the movie worried as I was that someone was going to die at the end?
No.
No.
Because it was called Civil War. And,
I thought that was Rhodey getting injured.
Right, but they kept talking about how Tony's arm was going numb, his left arm. And I thought, maybe they'll switch it around and have Iron Man die of a heart attack.
Yeah.
And then obviously bring him back, but... because you know it's Civil War, and the big thing about Civil War was that Captain America died at the end of it, and you know they had Crossbones as the faint for all the comic fans thinking, oh well, Crossbones is in it. It's called Civil War, but then they killed him right away to throw you off the scent, and so I thought that was going to end with one of the two getting quote unquote killed, but that didn't happen.
Yeah, I know.
You seem to remember things, and I don't. So that happens.
Well, no, I thought there was going to be something with stakes, and when Rhodey got hurt. I thought Rhodey was going to die. Actually, I'm surprised that they had him live.
Right.
Because I thought that was going to be the sacrifice.
Well, if he dies, then they really can't come back from that. They can't.
Yeah, that's true.
They can't become friends again.
Yeah. And it was just short of, like, it's pretty bad what happened to him. I was actually that's significant because that's stuff they're going to have to deal with.
But then also, a conversation I was having coming out of the movie the first time, so like, yes, that's horrible and he's paralyzed, but can't he just get in the suit?
Still? Well, there was a whole Iron Man arc about that in the 80s.
Yeah.
Where he got addicted to the suit.
You don't remember.
It was the only way he could walk.
Right, yeah.
You remember things?
Come on, you don't remember things.
I don't remember Civil War, no. Why would I?
That was Ned Brubaker's run. That was issue 25.
Yeah.
The death of Cap.
Yeah.
But not the...
Anyway.
I don't tend to think of that as Civil War comic. I tend to think of that as...
Brubaker's run. Yeah,
absolutely.
And like I said earlier, speaking of Brubaker, is that I thought this movie had more Winter Soldier than the Winter Soldier movie and dealt with his past and all his stuff. I thought way more.
Well, if you're Ed Brubaker, and you could have said this in the last one, you got to be watching that rendition of that character and just being like, "Fuck yeah!" I mean, it's him.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. They nailed it. So now it wasn't perfect. Can we talk about a couple of complaints, or my only complaint about the movie?
I want to know what this is.
Yeah.
Like, Vision was not in the outfit enough. The sweater vest.
Sweater?
No, okay. I'm kidding. Yeah. No, I'm joking. I kind of lamented a little at the apparent wasting of Zemo as a character, and I thought that as the villain and as the antagonist of it, it was. In my mind, we know Marvel has a hard time with the villains and Marvel has a hard time with the Act 3. The whole plan was, while I liked the development of realizing that it was him orchestrating it and doing all this stuff, when we got to the end game, it was just like, oh, that's it?
But he was successful. His plan worked.
Yeah.
No, he was. That's
he won.
Fine. I'd say the problem, you know what? I don't mind any of that other than the fact that it was kind of cool to see him be called Zemo at first, and that did not pay off.
Yes.
And now they've wasted Zemo. And I was like, shit, it's going to be Zemo. It'll be his father. And
they haven't totally wasted him. He's not dead. He's in prison, who can very easily get out of. He is himself a basically super soldier. So he can come back as more of a Zemo-esque character. But his plan to destroy the Avengers from within worked. They were, by the end of the film.
I don't have a problem with that. And also, I love that actor.
Daniel Brühl.
The guy from Rush.
Yes, he's fantastic.
Yeah, and so I'm down with him completely, and I liked the whole thing he was doing. I loved the trick with the cell phone. It's just that calling him Zemo was was a cheap throwaway for something that I like Zemo a lot. I was like, oh, cool. Make that character relevant. That's great.
Yeah.
More of a throwaway than like Bat was.
So I don't know. That was really my only kind of nitpick complaint about it. You know, it was just that, you know.
Here's mine, and it's kind of a big one, but I didn't let it spoil it for me, really. Huh? I don't fully know that I bought Steve Rogers completely just throwing all of that away based on his principle instead of trying to figure a way to work it out.
But he, like, I know they had he has to get a long history it. Of doing that in the comics.
I know that. I'm just talking about this movie that I'm watching. Like, okay. It just seemed like it was like they had to have that happen. Sign. You know, he has to walk away and like throwing everything away. And like everybody else's motivations around it seem to make sense. And it's one of those things, like, I remember reading Civil War and going, I like Captain America, but it seems like in the real world, this would be the Tony Stark thing would be much more realistic.
I don't know. I felt as if Chris Evans sold it well.
The track from the last film, in which he was very much against S.H.I.E.L.D.'s plan to monitor everyone and preemptively kill people.
No, and I'm saying, like, the deal they were offered is a bad deal. Totally down with that. But, like, the escalation of it to the next point was, it was handled really well, as much as it could be. But there was just a little part of me that was like, would this part happen? But then when you start doing that, then it all falls apart because it's all.
Well, yeah, no, but I get the sense when they're in the room talking about it. And, you know, he says, you know, like, what if something's going on that we don't want to intervene with, but they send us? Or what if something's going on that we want to do and they don't send us? You know, like, that idea of choice. And I thought that kind of did it. And then with the Peggy Carter funeral, that kind of bolstered it, you know, and just kind of, you know, I bought it. I bought the conflict and the rift and understanding it. And I guess what bothered me was that it was the Accords, like, because we don't have resolution on the Accords.
Right.
They signed them. They're a law, so they're still there.
Further.
Right, yeah.
Sharon Carter's in prison now, right?
Sharon Carter was no. She was never. No one knew she was involved with them.
I know. But I was like, geez, she's just.
Yeah.
Giving it up.
Yeah.
All I was like, that's treason. There's no way around that one. That's pretty bad.
Also, this movie, unlike the other film we're not talking about anymore, mom's very important. So at the end,
I noticed that too.
Tony's back on Steve's side when he realizes that it was all Zemo's doing until he finds out that the Winter Soldier killed his parents and he killed my mom, Steve. And I started giggling because it was like, wow, it's just.
And there's also when they captured Winter Soldier and he was in the arm press and he was trying to prove to him that he wasn't brainwashed and he's like, your mom's name was whatever. Like, he knew he went to the moms, you know, like.
But that wasn't as bad as the all turning back on the moms, just like the other film.
Yeah. But
your mom's name is Martha too.
speaking of that, though, how jarring was the opening scene with less than zero era Robert Downey Jr. acting with John Slattery?
At first, I thought it was just. You know, they were shooting him from far away, sort of out of focus, and I thought, oh, they put big clothes on him. And then he got close to the camera, and I was like, oh, they really enjoy that de-aging technology in the Marvel films.
They're better now than they used to be with X3, but, like, that was weird for me because, and you too, both, I assume, because we knew that guy.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
I was like,
that's why.
The jerk from Weird Science. What's he doing?
Yep, or no, I went less than zero. I'm like, it's him from less than zero, like to a T, yeah.
Well, it was somewhat like that in Ant-Man with a young Michael Douglas.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's good technology. It's creepy, but it's working.
I don't know. I like that. That was cool.
This was a solid film. I don't really have any major the only nitpicks were in the beginning. I thought the action was shot really shakily. Yeah. It had that weird frame rate problem in the beginning that you were talking about.
I don't think it's a problem. I think they do it on purpose because it happens so much. It can't be a problem. Well, you know,
happen in Winter Soldier. It's weird. They didn't shoot it like that in Winter Soldier. I don't know why they did it this way.
Having seen, like, you know, Transformers, I'm like, well, I can't complain about this.
Yeah.
Right. It was getting close to that. Only in the beginning sequence, and it didn't happen.
I complain about all of it. Like, I feel like all the modern action movies do that now, and I think it's got to have something to do with the use of CGI and all this, because that's a question I had too. But so the big fight in the airport, and they're all in costume and stuff like that. So is the kid playing Spider-Man crawling on the wall, or is that a stuntman, or is that just a computer program and that he's doing
CG.
A voiceover?
That's CG. Yeah, right.
I think we're all sort of getting past the point where we pick out CG that stands out. But there was always a transition point when they would go from flying to walking or vice versa, or when they'd hit the ground and roll, where all of a sudden they were Captain Rubber Body.
Right.
And I saw it every time, and I was like, you're not impressing us. You're making it stand out, so stop doing that.
they really liked the jump and fall and roll maneuver.
Yeah, like basically anytime Sam Wilson did anything, we had to see Captain Robert body version.
Right.
And I don't like
it. And Steve, same with Steve, like every jumping off buildings and then the roll and all that sort of stuff. Love the use of the shield though. And even Spider-Man says that this defies physics. Like when he bounced it off the ground and hit the guy and did you hear a cuckoo noise? I heard a cuckoo noise. Right? Like
I like that they're just gonna call that stuff. I mean, I think it's so funny that the movies really are starting to do what the comics sort of were always purported to do. Well, Marvel does this a little more self-aware. You know, the DC stuff was this way, and that's happening in the movies. Except it's amplified in the movies.
Yes,
to a big extent, and it's causing quite a rift because of that. Because like, can you imagine anything even close to self-aware in any of the last few DC kind of movies? Nothing even close. And this is just like, hey, that doesn't make any. I mean, you know what that joke was? That was the joke from Anchorman. That Paul Rudd said.
Yes, yeah.
60% of the time works every time. Will Ferrell goes, that doesn't make sense. That's one of my favorite movie jokes of all time. Yep. And they just basically did it here. And I was like, all right, it doesn't. But we're going to go with it because it's a movie. Shut up.
Oh, God. All right. So recapping, my top five things are Spider-Man, Paul Rudd, Vision in the outfit, Jim Rash. What was my fifth one?
The vest.
Sweater. No.
Vision in the outfit. Vision in the outfit. Yeah, what was my fifth
Hot Aunt May?
Oh, yeah, Arrested Tomei. Yeah, done.
I feel like you've adjusted that list.
Oh, I did. I think there's one I'm missing, but God, Marissa Tomei. She looked great.
It was a really fun movie. I think somebody said the running time was, what, like 220 or something like that?
Yeah, it didn't feel like
I had no idea. I really didn't know what it was. I didn't feel it. And I've felt it in other movies. And in this one, like, it was super entertaining. It was, like, oh, these are even, like I said, they even started to get Hawkeye right. So I was pretty happy about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a win. I mean, it's so let's ratings. Let's give it ratings. Connor, what letter grade do you give it?
Letter grade?
Letter grade.
A-.
Okay, Josh?
Yeah, I was like A or A-.
All right.
Am I grading on a curve?
No, you're grading on a grade.
High A-.
All right, I'm gonna go out and just give it a straight A.
So yeah, I mean, I'm like 93.
All right, so next up is Doctor Strange, the end of this year, and then we jumped to 2017 for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, Spider-Man Homecoming, Thor Ragnarok, and then we have to wait 2018 for Avengers Infinity War.
Which won't be called Avengers Infinity War.
Right, we have a new title. 2018 is Black Panther, Avengers Infinity War to be named later, and Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yeah.
Great was Black Panther?
Great.
He's in my top five. I mean, just the way that he moved and fought was different than how everybody else did it.
Yeah, I love the way he jumped with his arms out and his legs up. It was like the comics. It was very good. Ryan Coogler's directing that film. It's going to be really good.
Cool.
Yeah, so there you go.
So that's it for the Marvel schedule, but then we're going to be back later this month to go kind of more in my little corner of the world is X-Men Days Apocalypse. Of Apocalypse Past.
Apocalypse.
Book three.
Inside Lewin Apocalypse.
Yeah, no, the Apocalypse Wars. No, that's the storyline in the comics right now. Yeah, so I'm very excited for that. So that should be good.
It's the fall of Poe Dameron.
Yeah.
So in the meantime, you can go to fanboy.com. You can find the post for this show. You can tell us what you thought of Avengers, Captain America Civil War. And as Ron said, we'll be back in a few weeks for X-Men Apocalypse. Maybe we'll do one on Preacher. Who knows? There's lots of stuff happening this summer, so check it out. We also Ron and I maybe decided we're going to do Warcraft. We don't know yet. We haven't.
I want to do Warcraft, and we should do Preacher. And yeah, anyway, but so we'll do it all. I don't know.
We'll see how Preacher leaves me.
I got into an argument I was out last night, and actually comic book writer Matt Rosenberg was with me, and the Warcraft commercial was on TV, and I got excited, and he's like, really? I was like, yeah, look at it. It looks great. It's a tale of heroes.
that movie is going to get a pass or fail depending on which of the peons they quote at what point.
More work.
If somebody just goes, more work? You'd be like, loved it. That's all it's going to take.
All right. All right, so until then, I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
I'm Josh. And we shift each other's body to accept the bullet. And can't tell you the pleasure, the treasures of battle. It's only for
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.